Okay.
So I'm pretty much, what? We're just going to keep going with where we were.
I don't recall where we left off. I know there was a brief, you know, freak out about my charger, but
there, we took about a week intermission. Nothing. Matt, come back.
Oh my God.
Why would we bother doing podcasts?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot.
So that was just be a print artist.
Better.
Better. More betterer.
Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
Hey guys, if you're into dark fantasy and horror and suspense and mystery and a plot that you can really just let yourself go into, then listen, we got something to tell you. June 2nd over on Kickstarter, we launch Welcome to Everville number 1. It is the first horror comic book for Catalyst Comic Studio. And it's a doozy. It's one that we really think people are going to enjoy. We're trying to take it back to some classic stuff with a deeper storyline than just a slasher. So if you want to get invested with something new and you want to help us fund this book, then be looking all over our social media and join our Discord as well. We're going to release the trailer soon so you can check out all the stuff we have coming up for Welcome to Everville number 1 coming to Kickstarter June 2nd. Mark your calendars. This question from beginning to end. How do you decide what panels to use? I'm gonna say from a constructive side.
I'm gonna let Joe answer. I mean, mine are. I want to hear how Joe constructs panels.
I'm very old school in my page construction. I actually use panels. You know, there are so many artists now that don't. There are an infinite number of ways to fit a page together. It depends on how many panels are on that page. What's the art trying to get across? Is it action? You know, everything informs how I'm going to approach that page. I should say that when I panel, I try to follow the rules, you know, the rules as they were laid out for me anyway, is the first person speaking is always on the left. Every page needs to have at least two angles. Every page needs to have at least one full figure. Every page needs at least one close up.
That's your checklist. You put all of these,
yeah,
it's a checklist for all these things.
Yeah. Joe, what was that second one?
you put all of these things that you feel are necessary into the page, and you see how it falls out of you. And when it does, like Matt said earlier, you know, like when a page falls out of you like that, it's gold. You know that has to be the way to approach it, because it came out of you so fast. You know, it demanded to be born, kind of.
It was that magic trick that you finally mastered, because seeing how drawing is just magic with a pencil, creating things, and just you just pull that rabbit out of the hat, and you're just like, boom,
once
page.
Once you learn that card trick, man, you do it over and over again.
Exactly. But the trick is making sure people can't see the trick. It's you know the structure.
Effort, you know. Yeah. Just as an example, I know the people listening to the podcast can't see the page that I just submitted to you guys today, but I submitted a page and I thought it could be better. I thought there was a better way to approach it. And so I said, hey, Aaron, how about I open up this panel here at the bottom, and it's going to do a lot for the page, I think. And it did. It absolutely opened the page up. It started out conversational. It was one of those pages, just, you know, tilt breaking the fourth wall. But
by the end of it, it
turned into something else. You know, it was just a conversational page, but aesthetically, I'm loving it right now.
I think for me, I kind of made my own rules, not for like kind of like how I wanted to
rebel.
Learn. How I wanted to learn comics. So I told myself I didn't want to do with Paradigm, the very first book. I said I'm not going to do any crazy panels, stuff that I'm not ready to like visually be able to tell and pull across. I don't want it to like. I needed to spend more time trying to learn how to draw characters and tell the story, as opposed to like, let me draw a crazy panel and then not know why I'm drawing a crazy panel that won't make sense and help guide your eye through the page like it's supposed to,
right,
or do things like that. Like, there's just those, like, I'm slowly, I mean, if anybody picks up Everville, and if anybody has seen Paradigm,
when everyone picks up Everville,
yeah, I hope that you'll see the progression, because like, you can see that I started doing inset panels and I started doing full bleeds on certain things more, you know, like it's, I've gotten more comfortable with character design and anatomy and a little bit of backgrounds. And like, now I'm starting to perspective stuff, you know, like it's just, I'm not a Marvel artist. I'm not going to make it. I'm not to that point. It's okay to start slow, build up, see a progression. It's a good thing to do. So with panels for me, oh, go ahead.
It's funny because I showed Kelly the video yesterday for the trailer for Everville. Mm-hmm. She was like, Matt did that book, right? I was like, yeah. She was like, wow, he's really growing. And I was like, I gotta remember to tell him that. And then I forgot.
that's all I'm after. Like, is every page, you know, you get told try to do better every page. That's it. Like, that page was good. Let me try and kick it up just a little bit. What can I do different? What can I do different to tell the story, but still be readable and stuff like that? So, I mean, with panels, you know, it's like Joe said, it depends on the shot. Is it like a wide angle shot? You know, you're not going to put a little square there. You want the full top panoramic kind of camera angle.
Right.
You know, if it's a really tall shot, you want a tall panel. You know, if you want that feeling of unease, you know, you want to put the horizon line at an angle to where it like feels crooked and off and just not, you know, just something's different. Just put you at ease. Like, there's just all those little tricks that you do, but the people don't know what you're doing. And that's how you know you're doing it well. So like, you read through a comic book and you don't realize what they're subliminally doing, but they sat there and learned.
It's all the technical work that goes into
exactly.
It.
So much.
You know, from the writing perspective, too, is that stuff that you can put into your script that I don't think a lot of writers realize. If you treat your panels like you're a cinematographer for shooting a movie, then you can put that stuff in there. And that's something I really am getting into adapting. And I think Everville has a few of those shots where it's like, I want the shot from the floor looking up. I know we have that at one of the pages that you just did. It helps with the art, but it also helps capture the vision that the writer had for the story as well. If the writer understands nuance, but.
You know, it's hard to find a university that actually does something akin to storytelling, sequential storytelling as a course. But most schools that have an art department, they have a film department. And cinematography, wow, it's all about the storytelling. It's all about the storytelling. So what you were saying about approaching paneling, you know, from that cinematographer's point of view, absolutely, absolutely. Everything from an establishing shot to the angle that you're taking it from. Everything informs the page.
Joe, on your point too, that's why we see so many comic books getting picked up for film rights and things like that now, is because you provided them their storyboard for the show.
Yep.
That's one of the biggest advantages you can have with comic books right now, is that's a lot of people are making more money than just selling a comic book, because you're flipping those rights. And someday when Matt and I learn how to master that, we'll talk about that on the podcast.
Go to Mark Mylar.
Yeah,
I was exactly. Very fortunate in high school, because in high school I was a part of a few local films. It was very like low budget stuff. I did some behind the scenes, so I kind of naturally know what looks good in a shot. So speaking, like, because you guys were talking about cinematography, I was actually like subconsciously applying the cinematography that I learned in high school to the comic pages that I was making. I'm like, something like rule of thirds is really important. That will help you lay out a page and even like one panel. And so I think, like, if you really want to learn how to make a page, I think cinematography, like, it correlates with each other. For, yeah, definitely, for sure, they correlate.
Yeah, they do.
Anything else to add to that one?
Nope.
Big fan of the splash page.
What? Say that again.
Wait, what?
I'm a big fan of the splash page.
Yeah, that's my favorite panel.
Panel page.
Oh.
That's my favorite panel to draw. The splash page. Yes.
That's the next script I send Joe is 24 splash pages.
Nice. It'll feel like the death of Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
Every page was a splash page.
I forgot about that, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I actually owned the comic shop in Brooklyn when The Death of Superman was released. And so I saw it coming because 2 issues before that, every page was 3 panels. Then the next issue, every page was 2 panels. And so when they did release Death of Superman and every page was a splash page, it was not a surprise.
Then they brought him back immediately, and it should have been 0 panels.
I tried to tell everyone.
It was just a blank book.
I tried to blow it up for DC. You know, I tried to tell everyone that he was coming back. So was Batman. You know, Batman's back wasn't broken for real. Don't worry. You know, Bruce Wayne will be back.
But Wolverine will be back.
They Cyclops always
will
be come back.
Phoenix will be back.
Comic book.
Will Iron Nobody Man come back?
That's, see, that's not true.
That's why
indie comics, we can break rules because Matt knows a character that I'm killing that no one else knows in the way it's going to be done even.
What? And
it's part of the Catalyst Comics superhero universe. That person's not coming back, man. They're not coming back.
I feel like me and Aaron have made a pact to where we will not do that. Like, I already told him, like, don't write stories where we have to bring characters back. Make their death important. Like, if you're going to spend all that time putting, you want your heart ripped out and you don't want them to come back. That's what makes it good. Like, I was there through it all.
It matters. You got to make it matter, you know?
Exactly.
Matt, dude, I'm telling you, man, when that one happens, it's going to be stupid.
No alternate universes and other dimensions, please. No one's coming back.
I'm doing
no
that
old
one,
versions of other people.
I'm doing one alternate dimension for kicks and giggles to play on the trope of alternate dimensions.
Oh, okay. That's acceptable.
Yeah. So, you know, but as far as this character,
it's going to be like that Spider-Man meme where all three of them are just like pointing at each other.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So this question, I think each of us kind of has a different relationship as far as this goes, but it says, how do you manage collaboration? So when it comes to doing
yelling.
Yeah. So as far as Kat and my relationship for collaboration, she yells at me a lot.
Yeah.
And then types the word screams a lot.
Yeah. In caps.
But yeah, no, see, well, it's a little different for me and Kat because Kat's also doing social media management. So we have to talk about other business stuff aside from just the book she's working on. But I'll let you guys talk about kind of the way we work together, I guess, with you and Catalyst Comics.
Am I answering this now?
Yeah. Let's see what Kat has to say.
I already forgot the question. So go ahead, Joe.
Collaboration. How do we manage our collaboration?
Kat, stop. Collaborate and listen, okay?
Okay, I got this. I really don't know how to answer that. I feel like collaborating is very easy because we have the same vision. Like, I feel like we have the same sense of humor. We have similar ideas. So collaborating just seems like it's just fun. Honestly, I felt like I'm being misunderstood or something, or my ideas don't matter. It's pretty seamless. So I feel like I don't have enough experience. Well, I guess you can talk about like collaboration in school. I learned a lot about collaborating with people, obviously in school. So I know what it's like to work with different types of people. And sometimes, here's a good example. When we were talking about if a character should have glasses or not, because you were talking about Gareth, you have to know, like, when your idea, like, isn't that great. Like, so, for example, I thought it would be best for him to not have glasses. But then Aaron had a valid point, like, well, he's supposed to be a nerdy character, so he should have glasses. So being able to, like, listen to the other person and realize, like, when your ideas really aren't going to be best in the situation. But it's also important to, like, talk about your ideas too. Like, they matter. So I don't know. It's been pretty seamless. The most important thing about collaborating is to be honest, I think.
Yeah. And with dealing with Kat, so dealing with Kat. See, she's sending her stuff to Matt and I, because, you know, he's coming at it from an art perspective. She has my story, so it's whatever. It's a little bit different for Joe. See, Joe, you still send it to both of us, but Matt's like, Joe knows what he's doing, so you don't need my approval. So it's, you know, he leaves that part up to me. Since you're working off of my script.
You know, that's my favorite word.
I sit there. I've told Aaron this how many times. I said, I'm not going to tell Joe how to draw comics when he's been doing it for, like,
absolutely you should, Matt.
Well, that, I mean, like, if it was just completely like, Joe, what is this page? Like, and like, absolutely. If I was like, Joe, I feel like you're definitely, are you quitting on us, Joe? Do you not want to draw Tilt anymore? That would be one thing. But like, I know your work. I know what you're capable of. You keep putting out, again, this goes back to the collaboration of, like, with me, you, and Aaron. It's, we know just from talking to you that you're passionate about it. And that's one of the reasons why we like working with you, because we could tell that you're passionate about it. And then when Ramon jumps in and he seems excited about it, that makes us excited about the project. We all get a better book out of it. You guys put your name on it. We want you guys to get all the work you can get. If for some reason we can't hire you, you know what I'm saying? Like, we only want the best for everybody that works with us. Like, we'll help promote other projects everybody's on, you know, like, whenever we can. And that's one of those things. So, but yeah, I'm not going to art direct Joe. that's kind of stupid. At that point, it's just like, Aaron looks over the script and goes, again, what Joe says, yeah, it tells a story. Approved.
Well, yeah. Joe actually reads my script, yeah. And he doesn't just say, oh, I know what he means by this page, and then draws whatever he wants. So, but again, I think we've already kind of talked about this in the sense of, when you have something that you want to see different, or you're comfortable asking us if you can try something different.
Absolutely.
And we're comfortable saying, clean.
The option. You know,
yeah,
exactly. If I have I will absolutely show you what my suggestion is. I don't like opening my mouth with a client or a script or whoever I'm collaborating with to put out a book. I don't like opening my mouth unless I've got something to show them. You know, if I think that it needs to go in a different direction, there's a reason for that. You know, I'll say things like, as a reader, this doesn't make sense to me, you know, or the story isn't flowing for me. I'm not seeing it yet. But collaborating within Catalyst, it's not really collaboration. You know, one of the reasons why I jumped on and am enthusiastic about Tilt is because I love that script. The first script you sent me, when he was breaking the fourth wall and we were traveling through his memories.
Aaron's crying. Hold on.
It really spoke to me. I knew that I wanted to do this character, you know, and from a design point of view, I didn't design Tilt. You know, I may be bringing him to life on the page, but Matt, you designed Tilt. You know, I stayed really, what, like 98% true to your design.
I mean, yeah, you definitely, that's what I'm saying. Like, you made him better, though. You made him Joe. That's what we wanted. We like,
yeah.
It's cool to just sit there and like, hey, here's my idea for it. do your version of it and let us see how it was. And as soon as you drew Tilt, that was Tilt. That's kind of how I look at it. You get what I'm saying? Like, that's the Tilt we know is Joe's Tilt. So that's, again, like,
and collaboration, put your stamp on him. As I see it, what I've managed to do as my part of this collaboration is I brought you and Aaron together. You know, Aaron gave us a character who is basically trapped in his teen years, you know, who's, if you read the dialogue, you can really see it, that Tilt has that kind of sarcasm, that snarky attitude that basically anybody who raised a teenager is going to recognize, you know. And Matt, you gave us the design for the character. What I did was give him an expression. You know, I drew, right, Matt, your design, but I put that snark on Tilt's face. And really, that was my part of the collaboration.
And right, I think it turned out wonderfully.
So it did. I agree.
And it still is.
Tilt is amazing.
Get tilted. Yeah. Yeah, so Matt, and then of course we talk about ours all the time. Our collaboration's different than, you know, every time we get guests on here, we realize that our collaboration's pretty much different than everybody else is doing in indie comics because we're actually on this thing together as co-owners. I do like to say, you know, when it comes to Everville, I was going to bring this up earlier, but I forgot. You know, Matt created the Neverling. He created that monster, the way it looked and everything. And that is literally why he has co-creator credits of Everville, is because he designed the monster from scratch. And I was going to get you just to say if there were any specific inspirations for actually creating that monster. And the reason I bring up that monster is because it's going to be something that you'll see in different forms ongoing in the story of Everville and some other stuff that we have slated as well.
I mean, I don't think I really had any specific thing. When I sit down and draw, I just kind of let it happen. Like if I'm drawing a character, I'm like, you know, with Tilt is one of those, like, he's a bulky character. I want him to be more solid. I'm going to draw he's not going to have a pointy chin. He's going to have a more solid kind of feel to him, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, you know, these characters. So, with the monster, it's one of those things where it's, you kind of just start fiddling around. Do I want him to have a nose? Do I not want him to have a nose? How is he going to, like, does he have the long fingers? Is it going to be more of a, I think the only inspiration I kind of drew from was almost like his mouth, where it was almost a predator kind of feel, like how the predator's mouth opens up. It's kind of like half of how the monster's mouth opens up. It kind of just folds all the way from the bottom to, like, to the top, and then goes back down over his jaw, like stuff like that. So it's really like if you were to take the predator's mouth, half it, and just fold it down, and then have that, like, crease down his mouth, so it kind of just makes it solid look to it if his mouth isn't open. And then of course he has to have horns and wings. Like, I don't,
right,
I don't know how to make a monster without horns
and wings. And I am, like, dying to see this book.
Me too.
I can't
wait to see it all put together.
Yeah,
it's been a long, long haul. But that's, again, this goes back to, like, the how many pages you draw in a day. When you work full time, it's hard to tell. You just do what you can when you can and try to get a few hours of sleep. So,
yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, righty. All right, we're getting to the end of the questions, but this is a biggie. So this is, how do you feel about the current state of the comic book industry, both the big guys and indie comics as well? And we'll start with Matt.
It's such a
little bit of trouble.
I guess it's, yeah, I don't know how to
just say it.
I mean, I don't know what
it's a crap fest.
I think it's just so many people are against each other there's so much like, I don't want to say fake camaraderie, but it seems like it boils down to it. I mean, everybody's in it for themselves. And I don't know why. I mean, like, if everybody would, are you Preach. Treating it as a business, or are you treating it as I'm a lone creator? You get what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, there's different ways to take it, and as long as you know where you stand on it, that's fine. You know, like, it's hard to come at it as just an artist when I'm a co-owner of basically what we're trying to start as a business. So I see why certain people do certain things in a certain way. As the business side, as the artist side, it sucks for some things, but, you know, really, you got to put food on the table somehow. Like, and it's all about art. And if you love art, like, if I'm not going to be a comic book artist, that's fine. I'm going to find another art related thing that I love to do, whether it's fine art, maybe I'll learn how to paint, who knows, whatever. But I still enjoy telling stories. So that's why I'm doing comic book art, that I enjoy this medium. And like, I grew up reading comic books. Aaron grew up reading comic books. Why would we not? So, right. I mean, the state of the industry is just, it's up in the air right now to me. I mean, but with me and Aaron doing indie stuff, we haven't really felt an effect of it because we're still so new. We're not in so deep that it's Marvel DC levels and all the other companies. You know, we don't own a comic book store. We would love to be in more comic book stores. You know, if you guys hearing this, you want to throw some, need some comic books.
Email.
We will send directly to you because, you know, Diamond doesn't like us because we don't, you know, we can't produce on the same level. And that's understandable. I get it. You know, as a business, they need product to come out. That's cool.
And as our business, we don't have to like them.
Hey, guys.
I hate them. There, I said it.
Yeah, I'm an indie creator. I don't really have much to say about the industry.
I'm just an innocent bystander.
I'm just
staying
the best
my
lane
for now.
So, Kat, you don't want to. Okay. That's Kat's entire take on the state of the industry is she hates Diamond. Joe, how about you?
My take on the state of the industry? Well, with all that's been going on, really, it's the retail side that's taking the hardest hit. And for indie comics, that's even worse because a lot of the indie comics get sold at the conventions that none of us are allowed to attend right now. As for my part of it, I'm a freelance comic book artist within the indie community. Business is hanging. You know, everybody seems to have the time off to do the writing. But, you know, right now, my calendar is backlogged by 2-3 months. So the state of the industry, I'm seeing it happening. The Kickstarters are flying, you know, and successful ones, too. I would have expected them to at least drop a few. But really, all the Kickstarters that I'm following, everybody's meeting their goals. As far as the big two, and I know you guys don't like to really talk about the big two on your podcast because it's about indies. They're moving in directions that nobody can really see.
Amen. You
know, Marvel just released a number of titles, digital only. No print copies at all.
Right.
That's going to be a game changer, I think.
Let's ask you this, Joe. Is that the new wave of the future? Are floppies going to go away for the big two? Are they going to try and just do more trades? What do you feel about, like, I mean, like, we discussed this with the writers, and for us, floppies are a must. We have to do it to pretty much pay for our next
book. Right.
To get to that point of a trade. But for Marvel and DC and them, they don't have to. They can straight up just go trade and be fine and tell a full complete story and get it out or go straight to consumers and completely skip the retailer. And, you know, bypass it and do what they want, because they kind of, you know, maybe have that power to do it.
Well, I think the floppies, the individual issues, are at this point becoming nostalgia. People really, I mean, just from the reader's point of view, you know, they really want those floppies. And when they really want those floppies, they go out and they get them. They go get those single issues. But there are so many readers today that want the trades. They want the full story arc. They want to know how the story ends. They, especially with indies, there's a reputation for them never getting there. You know, an indie comic that reaches an issue one, that's common. Everybody's got an issue one. An issue two is a milestone. Issue three, that's the pattern. That's the pattern you want. You know, is somebody actually finishing the stories.
Right.
So indies get a bad rep for not finishing the stories. So I don't blame people when they say they want the trades.
And what do you think is the reason that they never get past issue two? Is it bad storytelling? Is it the artist just bouncing on them? Is it not getting enough sales, publicity, or
it could
advertising?
Be a perfect storm of all those things. You know, and not just those things, but so many more. Everything's going to influence how a project it lands. Right. You know, if the art isn't up to snuff, if you have a fledgling artist who doesn't understand how sequential storytelling works, you know, that's not going to be pleasing to the eye. If the story itself doesn't move at an organic pace, that's not going to be fun to read. You know, there are a million reasons why indies don't get that number two or that number three or finish that first story arc. And a lot of the time, I'm not saying always, but a lot of the time it has to do with people's inability to differentiate between branding themselves as creators and marketing right. your product.
Yeah, I agree with that. With Matt and I have said it before, too, you know, there's starting to be an increase of people that recognize the name Catalyst Comics and Beards and Comics more than people recognizing Matt or my name, which is exactly what we want. That's pretty much the goal for the company, is that you recognize that company name ahead of the individual creators, because I'm not going to write everything that Catalyst puts out. That's not our goal. We want to become bigger publishers than just whatever I write and whatever Matt draws. So I think, you hit the nail on the head with the branding yourself as creators and know how to market your product as well. And I think you see a lot of things not go past about issue two, because people don't keep it going. You know, Joe, you say it a lot, you know, strike while the iron's hot, and
absolutely,
it's imperative that you do it. If you have something, that people seem to gravitate towards, something that people seem to enjoy, there's no reason to give it up until you've drained that well. And hopefully you absolutely don't drain that well, but you know, that's when you move on to a different story. I do see a lot of creators that do, you know, a couple issues of something, and then it seems like they just move on to something else. And I think that's probably too early.
That was my question I was going to ask. Like, do you feel that a lot of creators give up on an idea too early and feel that just because they have a low number for like maybe issue one or issue two doesn't sell, but obviously your indie creator is not going to blow up overnight. I mean, unless you are a huge household name somehow, but like, do you feel like, do they not flesh the story out all the way? Do you think like, that's what I'm saying. Like, at what point do you decide to quit on a indie title? You know what I'm saying? Because that's a hard line to go, oh, well, that book didn't sell good. Maybe the idea is the idea bad, or did they just not enough people see it? You know, like, it's a weird line to ride.
Well, nobody's going to put out an issue one if they think the idea is bad.
You know, the whole reason that they're putting out the issue one is because they feel the idea is great, that, you know, like, this is worth putting out there into the world. This is the story I want to tell. Yeah, it has a lot to do with losing passion for the project. I've worked with quite a number of writers who are great with the issue one, and then issue two rolls around and the passion for it has died a little bit. You know, maybe it's because of the reaction to the number one. Maybe it's because they want to move on to something else. Everybody likes the bright, shiny new toy. But it's perseverance. In my personal experience, it's perseverance. It's being able to push through that lull, because everybody's going to feel a little defeated if they put out an issue number one and the numbers aren't where they want it to be. And if they put out an issue number two and the numbers have gone down, oh, that's a gut punch right there. You know, it's so hard to stick with that same passion for the project and finish the story. You know, that being said, I have an issue one out that I put out years ago. I've never done an issue two. You know, the whole story's there rattling around my head, but I haven't found my way back to it yet. So is it dead? No. Just hiatus.
See, that's the other thing too, though, when it goes back to the floppies or the trades, because if you can get that whole story out and give it to people, at that point, you know if the idea is good or not, right? Because you have put out the entire story. So if people have read through that entire trade and got to the end and said, okay, it was good, but you can kind of say, okay, well, I technically did that whole first part. Is that enough juice to decide on a project's failure, or should I move on to another trade? You know, like, I think that's one of the feelings that I would get from it. It's how much time do you need to decide if the project's a pass or fail? And I think that's a good thing with trades, is because you can get that whole story out. It's kind of like with Paradigm, you know, it's a slow burn story. We want you to grow with the character. So when he triumphs, it means more because you were there when he was struggling, as opposed to, you know, like jumping straight into a superhero book and he's already maxed out. He's put all of his skill points and whatever he wanted. His physique, charm, a tilt, you know, like all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the difference between an origin story and coming to somebody who's in the middle of their story. You know, like when we first see Tilt in issue number one, that's not the beginning of his story, is it? You know, he does that in a flashback, brings us back. But we're approaching him as he's already in it. You know, with Paradigm, you guys started from the beginning. You know, so yeah, that's a slow boil. But once the pot boils, the lid's going to blow. You know, you want that big reveal at the end. That's what you're approaching. Right. What I think you were asking about was commercial viability. Like, when do you know if it's a failed attempt, or do you keep pushing? Is that what you were asking, Matt?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I guess it was more of basically that, but it's just more of, that's why, is it worth almost holding out to drop a trade? Like, would it be smarter for an indie company to sit there and say, I have enough to do a full trade? If you can get an artist, because then at that point, at the end of that trade, I know, okay, this idea is not flying over well. Let me go to something else, as opposed to issue one, sales okay. Issue two, sales worse. I'm going to give up, when issue three could have been the issue that really kicked it off and made people want to start loving that character or that idea and really take off from there. And you just gave up too early. Like,
right. Well, yeah, it's like I said, perseverance, man. You know, it's making sure that you put in the work. In a perfect world, I would say to have that trade in the can before you release. You know, if you want to do floppies, you can still do individual issues and then release the trade to maximize your sales. But having it in the can isn't always a viable production model. You know, a lot of indie publishers can't afford to put, you know, 4 issues to 6 issues of something on hold. You know, I'm going to hold all this work and I'm going to put it out there all at the same time to see if it's commercially viable. You know, I don't know if indie publishers can do that. I mean, Marvel, DC.
I definitely don't think indie stuff can.
Yeah. You know, I think people are here for a while, at least, you know, at least until it gets to a different point in time. You know, I mean, right now, artists are usually the hired guns and that costs money. You know, I mean, as far as I know, Catalyst is doing well and your recognition is through the ceiling. But could you guys have feasibly hired me to do the Tilt trade right off the bat?
Oh no, definitely not.
Tilt is one of the most successful indie titles that I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the biggest things that people overlook is assessing. I'm trying to think how to say it, assessing what you're capable of doing. So you know, we talked about branding yourself as creators. And marketing your product, but there's also just knowing that you want to grow something bigger than just tell a single issue story and see if it sticks. That is one of the differences that Matt and I keep hitting up against when we talk to other like publishers and creators and stuff. Is it seems like we think a little bit differently, and I think in the long run that might play in our favor. It already seems to, at least a little bit, that we actually want to create something bigger than just our names, and also doing it as a partnership is a big, you know, most indie creators, they're not going to have a partnership, and it's just because they don't want the overhead or the legal responsibility, or they're not willing to take it on. But when it came to like Matt and I, we were like, dude, let's just like try. And so that's been our thing all along, is let's just keep that worked. Let's try something else. And then we just keep trying stuff and see what works. I mean, that's how we ended up doing this too, is we just were like, hey, let's try it and see what happens. And people seem to like having an honest discussion about indie comics and it not just being a fluff piece. So I think a lot of building your, not just your fan base, but building people who actually enjoy what you do and enjoy who you are as creators as well. That's, you know, building that little circle is pretty important too.
Absolutely. What you and Matt have is kind of special. It's unique. It's a tier DEI. But, you know, I haven't seen a lot of indie publishers follow this this particular recipe you guys have on.
Well, you know, I think a lot of you guys could be a train wreck.
Everybody's been burned so
many times. Doesn't seem to be. You guys are killing it. You know, the content that you guys are putting out is diverse. You know, you're appealing to a lot of different factions of the audience. You know, some people in the audience, they only want that horror. You know, so Everville's for them. That's really enticing them. A lot of indies, they don't believe in the superhero genre anymore. You know, people who are into the indies, they're They don't want to see superheroes, but that's not the reaction I'm getting off of Tilt.
Well, that's what's so funny about it. I have this conversation with somebody else on Facebook. That same exact thing is superheroes. A lot of people feel is watered down, so you don't see a lot of indie creators even bother with it. Then you take it to a show and people buy it because they want new superheroes. They want something different and they want to see a story told in a different way. And I think that's why we're still capable of making superheroes, also because I have, you know, what, 39 more issues to tell. So
well, it's also that thing of like, I don't think people are tired. Okay. I'm sure people are tired of superheroes, but I think people are tired of the same superheroes, right? Which is like, because you can, just like Robert Kirkman did with Invincible, it was a superhero book, but it was told in such a different way. It didn't feel like a superhero book, you know? And yeah, it's all about how you write the characters and what they're, you know, as opposed to, it's good storytelling. That's what it boils down to, like, yes, in my opinion. So, but I mean, definitely people like horror. So we'll do, we're doing a horror. I like horror stuff. You know, I like superhero stuff. We're going to do fantasy stuff with Kat's book. And that's awesome. Very, you know, different. Like, that's the Lord of the Rings and very fantasy style. You know, like, that's what we want. Just that, that weird feel. So it's
got some sci-fi coming.
Got some sci-fi stuff in the works. Got that detective goodness coming eventually.
And none of, and see, I'm looking forward, we're not to doing any of that. We're not doing any of that for pandering reasons. We're doing it because my brain's broken and I have too many stories. And I like so many different things and so many different genres. I didn't want to put myself in one lane. And like I said earlier, I don't plan to be the one that writes everything. But for right now, I'm going to develop the stories that I write. And then eventually I can take on that role as editor in chief and hopefully develop some other talent.
Breaking the mold, Aaron.
Yeah, it's a lot of mold. Anything else for that?
Anybody got any more questions? Were there any questions?
There was one more question, and it's just it's one that we keep coming up against, and I know people aren't going to listen to our response to this, and they're not going to care, and they're going to send us emails anyway. But we keep getting asked, how do you get on our podcast? Our podcast is not for pitching your stuff. We have the opportunity for you to do that if you just leave us like a 20 to 30 second clip on our voice messages over on anchor.com/beardsandcomics. You can leave a voice message and we'll put them on the end of our show so people can still hear it. But the point of this show is not to have people come on and just talk about their project. It is to talk about our experiences as indie creators, to talk about our processes as indie creators, and the state of the industry and things like that. That's my answer for that question.
And hear me yell sometimes.
That's why I listen to every episode.
Yeah, you could talk about your book while you're on it to an extent, you know what I'm saying? But it's more of like, hey, what was your creative process coming into it? And what are the things you've dealt with in the industry as an independent creator? That's the stuff where we're trying to give everybody that, hey, guys, I want to draw a comic book. What does it take? I think that's the point of the podcast, is what we've been trying to do and just kind of, I guess, pull, you know, look behind the curtain a little bit. For anybody that's really super new to it, that may want to get involved to it,
it's or a people lot that of have been in it,
is what we're trying to tell you.
And just like hearing, you know, kind of what's going on.
The two of you are in the podcast, you know, so you're creating this weekly. Speaking as somebody who has listened to every episode, that's absolutely how it comes across. It comes across as a conversation about what's going on behind that curtain, you know.
Yeah, and so we build a list of, you know, it's not even like we built a list, but it's people come across our radar and we're like, oh, you know, they seem like an interesting person to talk to. Now, if you're listening to this and you just heard my answer, that doesn't mean we don't think you're interesting. It just means when you come at us and you don't know us and you just shoot an email into our inbox and say, how do I get on your show? And at the same time, I see that you're just pitching your book on your own Facebook page and every other Facebook page, and you're not having an interaction and discussion with people, then it's not that we don't want you on the show. It's just we would like to actually be able to have a conversation beyond your project. We do always let you pitch your projects and what you have going on at the end of the episodes. So for right now, it's more of people we come across and come in contact with, have interactions with, that we want to get on. And that's who we talk to for now.
Yeah. I mean, eventually it might end up getting to, once we get more people, but we're definitely want to get in, you know, other industry people. You know, we want to do other people that are doing the same thing we're doing. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Aaron knows who we've been talking about.
Yeah, we want to get people a different viewpoint of all the different aspects of creating comics, creating indie comics, stepping up to other levels, what people that are doing it much better than us are doing, things like that. And so that's one of the things we have coming up is we want to have a discussion with a publisher, and we're going to let people ask us all their questions that they would like to ask a publisher. And we have someone that is willing to be on it with us, and that's what we're trying to get to next, hopefully. So,
that's going to be very helpful.
But again,
that's the thing. We want to help people.
Yeah. And again, if you do have stuff to pitch, just send us a voice message, 20 to 30 seconds. I promise you, I will put it on at the end of our show. And if you have like Kickstarters and stuff like that, send us that message and I'll run it for the whole month at the end of our episodes. So you can hopefully get some listeners to check it out. Before we go, though, I want to make sure this is weird because I work with all of you guys, but I want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to talk about their projects and what people should be checking out. So Matt, we'll get rid of you first.
All right, guys. Well, like Aaron said, and we've already talked about June 2nd, we've already announced it. So check it out, is Everville Kickstarter we are going to do. And that is my second book in the Catalyst Comics universe. And I'm very excited. I feel like I've definitely grown. And me and Aaron have grown as a team, and it is a two-man project. That is why it has taken so long for it to come out, because we are doing everything with two people. So all the art is done by me.
Small goal, yep. $500 I want to knock that out day one. Day one.
That's easy. We'll get it done in day one. I believe it.
Yeah. So mark your calendars. We're going to launch it on June 2nd. $500 goal. We're just trying to get it printed. We want to be able to have this book to where, you know, we can send it to shops. They can check it out, hand it out, let people start feeling the love from Catalyst Comics. Check us out. And all the other projects will come along with it. So that's the big project.
All right. And Kat.
Okay. I'm working on my first comic book ever. So if you want to follow me on social media, I'm basically posting my process on how I'm making this because it is crazy. I've never done this before. So if you feel like you can't make a comic book, know that I'm doing it. And if I can do it, then you can do it. So, and that's all I have to say. Check out A Bard's Tale.
Yeah, and follow her TikTok. Joe.
Follow me on TikTok.
Follow you on TikTok. I will. Once I figure out how to get an account and if I remember a password. projects I'm working on right now. Well, obviously there's this little book, you know, Tilt number 3. Working on that with you guys. Pages are coming out. I'm working on a book for Iron Gate Comics, LRDV Comics.
Look at you go, Joe.
Well, for Iron Gate, I'm doing All Winners Society, number 2. For LRDV Comics, I'm working on Osiris Origins, which is kind of a Star Trek kind of feel to it. It's based in the future, and it's very sci-fi. I'm also working on Possession 6 for Michael Norwitz. I'm working on a lot of different things.
Everyone needs to be like Joe.
Well, it's like I said, earlier in the last week's episode, that a freelance comic book artist can't exist on one gig. You can't do just one job. So I try to float at least 3, sometimes 4 books at once. It doesn't hurt my production because I stay on a schedule. You know, you guys see new pages from me at least every other day. You know, and you're just
I really admire that.
We can attest to that all the time. Joe's like, here's the next page.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
When I first messaged Joe about Tilt 3, he was like, man, you're about 2 weeks ahead of when I thought you were going to ask.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. When we first floated the idea of doing Tilt 3, it was you talked about May, you know, so yeah. I left a little note on my calendar, you know, May. Okay, that was an iffy thing. You came to me 2 weeks earlier and said, hey, you want to start? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. So I threw you guys into the mix.
That was
awesome.
2 weeks later, right? Is this two weeks I've been working? All right. Two weeks. Just submitted page 8.
Yep.
But we have pages up to 11 penciled, at least roughly.
Yeah. Now, that's going to be on
that
Kickstarter.
That is one
later
awesome
on, people.
Flow.
So, yeah. That's how Joe flow.
We call that the Joe flow.
About
that
the
sounds like a new TikTok name.
You guys have seen me do this action sequence I'm working on right now is killer. There's at least one panel in there that's going to be my Facebook banner.
Oh man, awesome. I can't wait to see it now.
That's what we like to hear.
Better than
make every panel like it's going to be your Facebook. profile picture.
I love what Aaron said about you guys saying that you wanted to make your banners the Everville Kickstarter. And
yeah,
when you messaged me, like, oh, Kat posted, you can change the banners now.
Yeah, I had sent Matt the banner that morning, and I was like, whenever Kat posts that video, it's time to change our banners. And so she posted it, and I was like, go. Yeah. But
the gates are open.
We already got – Dale has already kind of told us an idea that he wants for his store incentive cover for issue 3. So, you know. I know, right? It's great. So, yeah, Tilt 3 is going to be on Kickstarter later this year as well. We're going to wait until we're
far enough.
But, yeah, so I think that's everything, right? All hearts and minds clear?
All hearts and minds clear.
Yep.
Didn't see that coming.
Everybody for Beards and Comics podcast, please check out the stuff we have going on. Matt already mentioned the Kickstarter. Don't forget June 2nd. Put it on your calendars. Beards and Comics podcast has a Discord. So jump on there if you want resources, if you're getting into the indie comics game and you want to see kind of the stuff that we look at when we're writing or we're arting. And check us out at catalystcomicstudio.com or all over social media, Catalyst Comic Studio, except for Twitter. That one's just Catalyst Comics with an X at the end. So check us out. We appreciate you guys. And until